You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, it's the double-headed Dream Team edition. And tonight, it's David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, Gary Boyson from Ranswith, both from Johannesburg. And Gary, I have to start with you because last night, I was watching football and then I suddenly remembered that the US Federal Reserve was making a decision on interest rates. Now, what happened was that they said, OK, 75 basis points up, the market tentatively rallied. Then they said, or rather Jerome Powell said, actually, we're going to start looking at maybe reducing the increments of increase. In other words, probably going from 75 to 50 basis points, and the market rallied some more. And then he said, but, we're not stopping this thing. Until we get inflation under control, we're going to continue doing stuff to the upside. And the market fell on its head, Gary. It was a fascinating evening for nerds like me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think and you've got exactly right. It's the terminal rate that has spooked markets. It's when a central bank like the Fed comes out and says what you're expecting, which is it to peak at an X amount, that's wrong. It's going to be higher than that. And that's a very, very kind of scary message to be sending to markets. And I think that's really what spooked everyone, because the 75 basis point hike was largely priced in, I thought. If you looked at the Refinitiv polls, 90 banks and brokers and economists had supplied forecasts, and 86 of them said that there was going to be a 75 basis point hike. So anyone that was kind of hoping for that 50 basis point hike, I think was living in dreamland.
Yeah.
But as you say, it was the very hawkish comments afterwards that kind of sent markets into a bit of a tailspin.
Yes, they did. And then we had the Bank of England this afternoon, the largest incremental rise for 33 years, the highest rate of the highest interest rate, benchmark interest rate for 14 years. So all sorts of things going on. And David, I asked somebody this afternoon in another interview on this matter, I said, are they saying that they know something that we don't? That's why they're being so aggressive. Or are they admitting that they are acting too late? What do you reckon, David?
Are you talking Fed or Bank?
Fed and Bank of England. They're both suddenly ramping up the rhetoric.
You know, there's a
what do you think?
There's a Yiddish word called dafka.
Oh, yeah.
And when you say somebody is dafka, what does that mean? It means he's deliberately acting with a calculation of antagonizing you. He wants to antagonize you. So you do something dafka. And I always find that with Jerome Powell. And as soon as the market starts to discount something and starts to believe that we're coming to the end, he comes in with a statement that dafka, that sends it up. And this was a dafka statement. We're going to slow, but the terminal rate's going to increase. Now, nobody knows that. Nobody knows that. And I don't think he's got the data at his disposal that can actually make a clear decision. And I think at the moment there's no clarity. At least what I liked about Bank of England, Andrew Bailey actually gave a much more descriptive view of what's happening, saying, this is the worst since the 1970s, and identified, he identified the background to this. But he also said, he's a lot more cautious because he understands that, you have an economy that has to grow, and somewhere along the line, you have to get the balance, which I don't think Powell is doing. There might be different economies in that, but I'm starting to get annoyed with Powell. I think there's a lot of ego and a lot of need to defend his credibility.
But also when it comes to the Bank of England, let's go back to the Bank of England. They also put out a pre-rate statement saying they think it's going to be the longest recession in UK history. Now, I was watching the BBC and maybe it's been taken out of context, but that's what I think he said. That's quite a statement to make. And that's why I wonder whether they know something that we don't. And there'll be an earnings recession, Gary, and there'll be an economic recession, and the consumer is going into his and her shells, and they just won't have the money to spend anything. And maybe there's some truth in that. I mean, Gary, I don't want to be a doomsayer, but you've also been slightly cautious in our last few meetings.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it was the BOE came out with a very different message to obviously the Fed, because, you know, they were also talking about the terminal rate, but they almost went the other way. They said, you know, from their opinion, they thought the market was pricing at a 5.25% terminal rate. And they said, it's probably not going to be required. You guys are a little bit too bearish on this. And we think that we'll get inflation back to around that 2% mark without needing to do that so much work.
That's so important. That's, you know, that's why I'm saying what he said. If he's saying 5.25 is too high, we believe that should be higher than the US. In other words, I think the UK is in a far worse situation, particularly with energy and electricity and all those issues. So what I'm saying, where the frustration with the Fed is coming, they're not going to go to five. You know, it's not going to get there. And that's why I'm saying.
Why wouldn't it get there?
What I call, well, it's for the reasons that you know, that Bailey identified. But things are starting to slow down in the U.S. Wherever you look, you know, the money supply, which is still a significant. In other words, they're withdrawing liquidity. Liquidity is there. You're starting to see credit momentum slowing. You know, the amount of borrowing is starting to slow down. There are a lot of things. Also, you can't ignore that. Many of the issues that we had last year, supply chain is reversing. Commodities are going nowhere. They've come down. So, I mean, we can go on and start identifying a lot of things like this. But the other thing that strikes me, which is so odd, I have never, ever in my life experienced a situation where a government is saying, or a central banker saying, hold on a sec, this economy is creating too many jobs. I mean, that is absolutely perverse, you know, and the job market.
Who said that? You know? Was that a Powell statement?
Well, it's I'm putting it into my own words.
Okay.
You know, the job market.
No, but you know what I mean. Who are you talking about now? The United States
Powell,
of America?
Powell. Yeah.
That is extraordinary.
Job, you know what, in other words, the job market is too strong. Because that's what he said, you know, the labor market is too strong. And it's not, go, Gary, sorry.
Yeah, I think David's like brought up a couple of very interesting points there. So one, I think it's all going to be about the non-farm payroll numbers tomorrow. So, you know, we're looking at unemployment moving from 3.5% in the U.S. to 3.6 maybe. And maybe that'll be the first sign of this weakening labor market. And yeah, I agree with David. Powell is definitely, maybe there's a little bit of ego, but he's definitely front-loading these interest rates. I mean, this is a very aggressive response, and I suppose we haven't seen it play out in markets, and I suppose that's why markets want to see, you know, some reaction in the labor market. And I think the distinction is, you know, as David was saying, energy prices are coming down, maybe in the U.S. to an extent. Maybe it's got to do with the at least ahead of the midterms, obviously all the special reserves that are being released, but. In general, you know, commodity prices aren't as elevated as they were. There has been a moderation since the supply chains have started to be sorted out. But that, you know, but the food prices and the energy prices, that's in the headline inflation number. I think what everyone is concerned about is that if this feeds into the labor market and people start, you know, demanding higher wages because there's higher inflation, that's when inflation becomes embedded and it becomes a real problem, which is obviously why they're front loading this. But another kind of interesting point is remember that the BOE is only at 3%. The Fed's already at 4%. So, you know, the BOE still has 2.5% to go to that 5.25 rate. The Fed is a lot closer. So I suppose, you know, where does this end? It's difficult because, you know, the fact is that, you know, yes, everyone is expecting inflation to come down. Yes, we know it's being front-loaded. But the problem is that because we haven't seen a reaction yet and because of where inflation still is, I mean, U.S. interest rates are still deeply negative. So, I mean, you can kind of take Powell's point that we have to maintain a tightening stance at this stage. So. I don't know, just to play the devil's advocate for a second there.
Okay. I can tell you one thing, Gary and David, is that you are not going to have the quiet year end, you know, where everyone's had a good year and winds down and looking forward to January. It's not going to be like that, is it, David Shapiro?
No, we got a decade. Next year is going to be a tough year. And I think what we have to get into our heads, that the kind of markets that we had over the last decade are not going to be with us. It's going to be a lot harder to get your growth. You'll get your growth, no doubt. You'll get it, but you've got to work a lot harder. It's not going to be a stroll in the park. So get used to that. Rates will be high, and you've got to find the companies that are going to be able to operate and grow in a tighter environment. So that brings us in. That makes it a lot easier for people like ourselves, like Gary and myself, who do their homework and who look at companies and that, rather than just taking a dart or selling a product, something like that. Yeah. It's going to be a lot more demanding.
Okay, so you're giving a punt to people that actually speak to clients and are active managers, yes, rather than ETF monkeys. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Exactly. Good. I like that. We have to.
I agree with that. Yeah, I think that's spot on. Huh?
Yeah. Exactly.
If you're looking at the broad-based market, I mean, let's face it. The demographic dividends that we've had paid for the last, say, 4 or 5 decades are going to come to an end just because of population growth. It's going to be about selecting much better stocks. You can't kind of just expect this like rising tide to lift all boats permanently. Yeah. And these kind of broad-based index trackers, I think, they've been sold so aggressively to the public as the silver bullet that if you just invest in this, everything's going to be fine. And I think people are going to learn in the next couple of years, but that's maybe not the case.
Let's get to the JSE now, because I found this, it's not disturbing, but I found it interesting. Like, we had 3 trading updates from Diggers. Anglo Gold Ashanti, okay, the share price only fell by 0.5% because a lot of it is, it's all overseas now, doesn't have any more South African operations. Goldfields was down around about 5% after its operational update came out. And it's a 3.2% loser almost. But Sibanye-Stillwater, operating update for the quarter ended 30th of September, share price falling 10%. Gary, I'll stay with you because David's not so much a commodities fan. 10% down for a company that has been the darling of the Diggers. What do you make of it?
And I mean, we were looking at it on Monday as well, ahead of the operational update. And I mean, this thing is dirt cheap. I mean, it's sitting on a dividend yield of, historic dividend yield of about 7.5%. It's sitting on a historic PE of about 6. And I mean, if you look at the forward numbers and the consensus, Sibanye is very cheap. And this trading update really explains why it's so cheap. So yeah. It was an absolute litany of disaster. If you want to go through it. Like everything that kind of can go wrong has gone wrong at this company. And I mean, it's everything from, obviously the Stillwater operation in North America. They've been facing kind of a 1-in-200-year flood. You've had, obviously, in South Africa, you've had pretty aggressive, strike action. Sure, and yes, yeah. They've signed their 5-year wage agreement, but they're also dealing with, obviously, power cuts, the utility locally. I mean, we know how difficult it is operating in South Africa. There's been armed gangs at their mines in South Africa, invading disused sections of their mines. I mean, the crime. They've been battling with cable theft. It's been a very, very difficult operating environment for them. And everything that kind of has gone wrong, is going wrong. And their ASIC has lifted, and it's becoming more expensive to mine, which is a pretty scary situation for the company. So, the stock price is dirt cheap, but, obviously got quite a bit cheaper today. And, we understand why. It really, I suppose, if these issues are sorted out, yes, things will improve. But a lot of these are systemic and almost ongoing. So, I suppose investors have to decide: is it cheap enough to compensate for the risk factors around the company?
David, you've always said you can't predict commodities. They're very volatile. If you get it right, you get it spectacularly right. If you get it wrong, it's horribly wrong. And when I hear what Gary has just said about armed gangs and floods and strikes and everything else, now I understand you.
Yeah. Well, South Africa, that's South Africa. I mean, that's symptomatic of just walking out of the street here. If you go on the road, that's exactly what you come across. So, I mean, you can't be a sissy to live in this country. But to be a businessman, slightly, is very difficult. And Neil's always opened up.
He's Neil Froneman, you mean?
Completely, no, Froneman.
Yeah.
He's always been upfront about the issues here. But there's another thing that worries me. And we had a presentation, and I love these chaps from UBS. And I asked about Anglo American because they've got Anglo American as a sell. And I said, what is the reason? Why you got it a sell? And one of the reasons was around the platinum group metals, where they believe, that demand for auto catalysts will start to fall. And the other issue was that rhodium and palladium would normalize. Mm-hmm. In other words, kind of closing the gap on platinum. and so on. So they're quite negative. On top of that, although this doesn't apply to Neil, well, Froneman is the is you know, the downgrade of the iron ore price. So it's not that easy out there, and all, you know, it's not that easy for mining companies in an environment of flat to falling commodity prices. Generally, they're actually in very good position. They're in a very good state in terms of their balance sheets. You know, even I don't know, Gary, I don't know Sabania. I don't know how their debt has been handled, but you know, if you look at the bigger ones, they're in a, you know, they're in fairly decent position. They're not cash short and they're not under pressure there. But I, you know, with Neil, I don't, with all the borrowing years, I don't know where he is anymore. I don't know whether it's
no. And if there's a lot of borrowings and interest rates are going up, then and it's not a fixed rate. Yeah. But anyway, we'll say, Gary, we know you've got to go to another media commitment. Maybe we'll just wrap up what we've been saying and what you think, because we're not going to speak to you for at least another 10 days. So what are the short term prospects for the market? And when I say the market, I mean the equity markets.
Yeah, so I mean, in spite of the BOE and the Fed last night, I think our view hasn't really changed, and nothing from either of the two speeches has changed our view. I think we think we could possibly see bottoms to equity markets in the next 6 months, and I would say, you know, with the volatility is clearly high at the moment. I mean, we're having 1 month up 10%, next month down 10%. I mean, that's just how the market's behaving at the moment. And I think now, I mean, we get a lot of questions from clients around this: is this now a time to deploy capital? And we're saying into the weakness, yes, we've had a significant correction. Yes, it is kind of, you know, still early in the rate hiking cycle. We think, you know, the pace is going to slow into the first quarter of next year. You know, it is going to affect underlying economies, and they are going to slow down. Inflation is going to come down. And as soon as we see that pivot, it's very possible that we see a much stronger equity market. So we're using this time to deploy. I don't know about the super short term. I don't know if we're going to get a Christmas rally or not, or the Santa rally, as they call it. But yeah, definitely. I think, you know, using these weak equity markets to start to deploy capital very gradually. I don't think there's any rush to get fully invested. But, you know, if markets do hook around and we just don't know when it is, and you look back, I think you're going to be really regretting not getting into equities. So,
okay, so it's
very,
just,
very strong dollar. If you're sitting on dollars, I would say now's the time to seriously start deploying.
Okay. Very good analysis and very responsible. Good luck for the good luck with those predictions. And Gary Boyson is from Rand Swiss, and he'll be speaking to us on Tuesday week. Gary's going to go now, and I'm going to stay with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. David, there were some interesting moves on the JSE today. The all share index and everything came off their lows. I'm going to give you some spot prices now, and you can comment on any ones that really catch your eye. The market seems to be a little bit exhausted after a couple of days of negativity. Where the Dow Jones, incidentally, the trend has been value stocks doing not well, but not as badly as the growth stocks in the S&P, and the tech stocks and the other growth stocks in the NASDAQ having been the worst off the whole week now. So it's 4 days. But anyway, let's go to the currencies, where the Rand is 18.35. British pound against the Rand is 20.58. Euro Rand is 17.95. Euro dollar 97.75. And the British pound has fallen quite sharply. It's been sort of flirting with 115 the whole week. In fact, for more than a week, it's now currently 112.15, and the pound has fallen by 2.4% against the US dollar. And this is a big market. These are really big moves. Gold price down 16 to 16.29. Platinum is down 34 to 9.25. This is all strong dollar stuff, of course. Palladium down $51 an ounce, or 2.75%. And if I look at the other commodities, they're also all down, simply because they're priced in dollars, and therefore the dollar has gone up, and so they have to reprice themselves. Brent crude oil is down 0.8% to $95.41. West Texas crude is down 1.5% to $88.65. Natural gas down 2.5%. What else have we got here? Nothing much, really. Copper, wheat, and everything. No, they're just flirting with unchanged, to be quite honest. But David, a lot of people are saying that the US dollar will only be as strong as it is until the first 3 to 6 months of next year. I don't know how people can say that. I really don't know how they can say that. Because my view is, just before you give me your two cents, this a currency bull market or bear market runs and runs and runs. It's not like a sort of gold price or resources stocks market, which is up and down all the time. It gets into a groove and it goes for it. What do you think?
Possibly. I don't. I think that I'm quite surprised. In fact, I'm quite encouraged by the way that markets are. Because after the statement that Powell made, and after an obvious attempt to bring down the market, yes, it responded and there was a knee-jerk reaction. And I saw a wonderful comment today by a commentator, and he was saying that what Powell doesn't understand is that he's while there might be nuances in his speech, in other words, he's trying to project something and trying to balance it. He says that markets are actually not people; they're machines. In other words, you're talking to a machine, and the algorithm will respond, which the algorithm did. Do yesterday. In other words, it said, rates lower, rates higher for longer, past the terminal rate, put that in, and it started to trade. And I think that's what we have to be aware of. But what I'm seeing today is that I think it's kind of exhausting itself. And I thought that markets would be a lot weaker today, and they're holding up, they're not making new lows against this new environment. So I reckon we will stabilize and steady, and I think that's going to apply to the bond rates there in the U.S., and I think that's going to apply to equities as well. What the market's saying, that whatever Powell is hinting at is not going to happen, and I think it won't reach this very high terminal rate. They'll have to pull back sooner or later, mainly because the data will weaken a lot harder than they anticipated. So the markets are starting to act ahead.
That's interesting that you say that, because what you're saying while I remember this, when we used to speak to Nick Kunze, he and I used to say, Jerome Powell's got it wrong. Inflation is not transitory. It's going to keep on going up. So Powell got the upside of inflation wrong, and now what you're saying, you're suggesting that he's got the current situation wrong as well, and he's being too pessimistic, and in fact he'll be proved wrong for the second time, which isn't good for the custodian of the largest central bank in the world, of the world's largest economy. It really doesn't engender any sort of optimism from my point of view.
You put it very articulately, exactly that. And I think that he lost credibility with his transitory. Now he's trying to regain it. Mm. And he's trying to say it's better to be aggressive and, in other words, rather over-tighten than under-tighten. But I think what will happen is that he'll have to pull back sooner than he wanted. So he's trying to regain. And he's playing into the hands of the Al Arians and the Larry Summers, who are supposed to be that's unfair. Very erudite men, etc. So he's trying to match them, but Lindsay, I don't believe that anybody has got models or an understanding of what's happening in the war, and that's where what I liked about Andrew Bailey's statement today. Just identifying what we've gone through, saying that the Russian invasion of the Ukraine and the supply chain turmoil. From the pandemic have had a bigger impact than the energy crisis of the 1970s, on the UK. So he's identified, we've gone through a very, very difficult period. No one can really clarify it or understand it. And therefore, I think that to try and use an old playbook, to attack it is very difficult. So I think it would have been in his interest or everybody's interest not to say anything. You're a central banker. This is what we're doing. End of story. Go away.
Yeah.
Don't try and rationalize and clarify and do the things. Because if you go through his speech in great detail and say, oh, that's dovish. Oh, that's hawkish. Oh, that's dovish. Oh, that's hawkish, And you get this kind of confused you get this confused message that's coming through. And that's why the markets did what they did, because they screamed up initially, you know, when it was dovish, and then they fell down aggressively when it was bearish, you know, on the one statement of extending the terminal rate. What was he, dovish or bearish? You know,
and who knows? But all I know is, David, when we talk glibly and casually about the US Federal Reserve raising interest rates by 0.75% and the Bank of England doing the same thing, what a lot of people don't quite understand is the enormity of such moves. Because what you're talking about is the price of money, the price of the world's reserve currency has suddenly gone up by 0.75%. And if you, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you overlay that on, if you divide that by the existing rate, these are massive percentage moves. And there are companies and their treasury departments and accountants and bean counters and governments, never mind companies, governments as well, saying, we've got to do something about our debt. And again, it's chaotic. And these moves that that sound really tiny are game changers.
Yeah. Lindsay, that I think that's a valid point. And that's why one's got to be sure and very, very careful. And again, I refer to, you know, to Andrew Bailey. I think that you can't just ignore the underlying economy. That, you know, they will claim that the U.S. economy is strong and can withstand that. But just, you know, I was looking at a chart this morning. On the 1st of January, the 2-year rate in the U.S. was 0.75. It's now, I think it's above, 4.55. That's when I took it out this morning.
That's massive.
I think it could be near 4.7. From 0.75 to 4. You know, that's the multiple that it's gone up with. And the same as the 10-year bond, I think, which is maybe 4.10 at the moment. I don't know where it is. I haven't looked at the latest, but it was 1.5 at the beginning of January. Yeah. So you can see the kind of gains. And that's why you talk about the chaos that this has caused. And it also causes chaos at ground level, you know, with certainly in the property market. I think that's where the biggest hit is going to be. Even though a lot of people do fix their bonds, it's going to have significant. What's a 30-year rate? I think that's the bond rate.
I don't know.
It was 1.9. Yeah, it's 1.9. I think that's also 410, 415, 420, even higher than that.
You talk about ground level stuff, and it's very, very interesting because we talk about big markets and you know, tech stocks and major indices, MSCI and S&P 500, etc. But don't forget, it's just people that are driving these things and people that are buying and are selling, consumers, in other words. And I watched a very interesting interview. It was just a snippet, and they grabbed this woman in the street and they stuck a microphone in her face and said, what do you think about what's going on? He said, well, she said, it's very interesting. Very pretty young English woman. She said, myself and my partner, we were going to buy a house. But suddenly the fixed rate income, this fixed rate mortgage rate has gone up by 3.5-4 times. And we really can't afford it. And we said, we don't want to be in Britain at the moment. It's not a good time to be in Britain. So we're going to take this small amount of money that we had, which we're going to use for a deposit, and we're going to go traveling for a year because it's not the right time to buy. We don't feel confident in the government. We don't feel confident in the Bank of England, etc. And when you multiply that by tens of thousands of people, you realize what a state the consumer is in at the moment. And that's why I think this whole situation will be extended, because people will go into their shelves and won't be able to spend.
That's the worst thing that can happen. The absolute worst thing that can happen. If you extend what you're saying, for me, that's the big fear. Where I'm going to take two parts of what you said, you know, where, and if this was the quote, I assume that you've got it right.
Yeah.
You know, where she said, we don't trust the Bank of England and we don't trust the people in charge.
She wasn't specific. I was embellishing that, but we don't trust the people in charge. Let's put it that way.
Okay. In other words, where you lose credibility for the people in charge, that's a major statement.
Yeah.
You know, they shouldn't be like that. They should be able communicating to a point where you actually understand why, what they're doing and why they're doing it. You know, you can't be aloof from the people on the ground, you know, in Main Street. It's very important. And that's where I think the Fed has kind of lost the plot to an extent. They, you know, it's not being communicated. And that's why the Democrats and people will lose, because they will be blamed for what's happening now. The other point is that the big fear is that if you go into a position where nobody wants to invest, where no one wants to do anything, the hardest thing is to reverse that. Even when rates come down, they get so scarred by, you know, the pain of high interest rates and the pain at the pace at which this happened, they don't come back fast. You know, they don't come back. They remember that. And that slows down growth for a long time. And that's why governments then have to come and stimulate the economy. You know, they have to now bring down rates and try to get people to go and borrow and spend out again, which doesn't happen. And that's why we had this almost lost decade after the 07-08 period, where interest rates remained very low because nobody wanted to borrow. They borrowed to put it into fixed investment, buy back shares. Sorry, not fixed investments, into a security, sorry.
Yes.
And, you know, to the market. So it's important that you keep growth going, that you keep people wanting to grow. Gary was great. He said, listen, we're going to use this to buy shares, you know, cheap shares, et cetera. Yeah. That's the right attitude you want, although to invest, to look for businesses that are – they are trading at low levels and so on. But it's very important that they don't kill the economy. You know, they don't kill the desire to grow or to do things.
Okay, let's have a look at the JC now. Yeah, there's so much to think about. And these are not small matters either. These are big matters from the macroeconomic and the economies of various different countries, but also from the man and woman in the street as point of view. These are very, very meaty issues. Okay, I'm exhausted already. Bytes was up 6.1% on the JSE today. Advertech up 2.5%. Kumba Iron Ore rallied 2.25%. Fortress A, the property company, up 1.25%, let's call it, and Sogo Sun up 1.25% as well. On the downside, I've got one. They were this morning all diggers, but anyway, I've got Sibanye-Stillwater down. Let's call it 10.4%. Really big move. Karoo down 5.8%. Impala Platinum down 5.25%. Dis-Chem down 3.75%. Is that an ex-dividend story or something? No, Dave.
No.
No, it's just down.
No, ex-dividend is end of the month, 23rd of the 11th.
Okay, all right, because it had some half-decent results. Anyway, and Motors down 3.75%. Anything you've looked at today, you've got a different watch list to mine.
No, I think it's pretty much the same. I think those were the big movers there. There were a lot of smaller businesses out today with updates and that, which I didn't quite look at. Just I think on the, you know, you mentioned on the ENX, which is an equipment lender or financer, they came out with results. I just like this guy. It's a very small business. They were up about 13.5% on a turnaround in theirs. But I'm trying Afrimat down 6.6%. I don't know if you picked up Cash Build again, also under pressure, 4.5%. Nampac down 3.8%, and so on. So I think generally a long list of downward moves. I think just really tracking what's happening on global markets.
Okay.
It's a difficult period, Lindsay. It's, you know, whatever we're discussing now, I think trying to work our way through this quagmire is very hard because there's no clarity and we don't understand it, you know. And I think we look to the feds, you know, we look to the Fed, we look to the government, to the fiscus like the Secretary of the Treasury. We're looking at government saying, okay, give us some guidelines, but you're not getting it at the moment. It's very confused and difficult to grasp at the moment.
I think that everything that you said and that Gary said, I agree with him, easing himself into the market, you know, with small increments here and there, etc. But you wouldn't want to commit a client's full available capital at the moment, because I feel there's, given the recent history, the recent volatility, that one day you could be feeling cock-a-hoop and the next day you're down in the dungeon again. Yep. So I think look at the S&P. The S&P an hour ago was virtually unchanged. It's now down 0.82%, S&P 500 futures. Yeah. David, give us the JSE indices that you track, please. Closing prices.
It's exactly what you said, because at one stage, I think the S&P actually was close to almost break even, and suddenly something happens that knocks it back. So you're getting that volatility. Everything was down. The all share index ended down 1.6% at 66047, with resources providing the biggest the biggest losses. The resource index overall down 3%. Precious metals, that would be Sibanye and the mining, the gold mining companies, down about 4.4%. And then, likewise, just general sell-off in both banks and in the industrials. You know, those indices down in the region of about 1% to 1.25%. But most of the damage was, brought about by the mining markets. The rand at one stage was 8.40. You know, we'd almost, before Powell spoke yesterday, I think we were almost down at about 8.10.
Yeah.
And a lot was given back. It's still very volatile today. You know, the rand is still, at the moment, now it's 18.37, so it's all over the place.
All right. Yeah. And the value traded today on the JSE? That's some good days recently.
I was actually looking at that. I'm going to give it to you now in a sec. I was actually looking at it before we went on air. It came in about 21 billion. And spread, okay. There's a lot of trade. Naspers, SAS. Sassel's been very big trader now after that, the announcement of that loan, a $750 million loan. I think it's confused investors. They're not quite sure what it's for, why they did it, and why they needed to come to the market. And it is quite dilutory, you know, meaning that a lot of the bondholders will likely convert, which means more equity shares in issue. So I think Sassel's been under a bit of pressure, yeah.
Okay, David, thank you very much for your time this evening. I shall be watching Arsenal against Zurich this evening. I'll be flicking between that and a couple of other games. But anyway, Arsenal, I think they're already qualified. But anyway, it'd be nice to see them thrash Zurich 3-4-0. Do they need to win?
They need to win, because if you come second in the group, in the Europa, you have to play two qualifying games, and there's some goodness. Big teams. There's Barcelona that has been didn't make the cutoff once again.
Thanks
and the
for
other
reminding
one is
me.
Juventus. Yeah, no, I can't believe it, Lindsay.
I don't want to talk about it. It's too depressing.
I know it is depressing. So you don't want to have to qualify.
No.
You know, you don't want to have to qualify
for
this.
It's demeaning. So, it's actually demeaning to have to do so. Club
and,
that
and
size.
They're good teams, I think. Even though it's a Europa League, there's some pretty good teams playing.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. And there's millions of games. They're really milking football for everything it's got.
We've got the World Cup coming. So.
Oh, God, three weeks to go.
I know you hate it. It doesn't matter, but still.
I hate the idea of it. I hate the idea of Qatar.
You're going to be watching South Korea play, I don't know, Ghana or something like that, whoever's there. You know, we watch those games.
Of course we do, because we're sickos. Anyway, David, thank you very much for your time. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors, and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.